Hello and welcome to Beyond the Back Page with myself, Patrick Donoghue, on Near FM. 20 years ago, Brian Kerr led Ireland to victory in the under-16 European Championships. One of the members of that victorious team was Keith Fay, and I'm delighted to have Keith on the line. Keith, first of all, thanks very much for talking to me today.
No problem, Patrick.
Yeah, so Keith, I mentioned that victory 20 years ago and you scored in that final. Must be great memories of that day and indeed that tournament.
Yeah, of course. I don't think it really hit us back then when it actually happened. I think we're only appreciating it really now over the last maybe 5 years or so. We kind of come to the end of your career.
Yeah.
But at the time, obviously, it was an excellent experience and it's something that you live with for the rest of your life, I suppose, no?
Yeah, and in that tournament, I was looking at the teams that you bet. Like, you bet Italy in the final, you bet Spain, you bet Portugal. So it wasn't lucky. Like, it was you bet some serious times, serious teams to win that final.
Yeah, 100%. I think as each game went on, team started growing more belief that something could actually happen, and yeah. I think our last group game was against Spain, who were the tournament favourites at the time, and we came out winning that game 1-0. So I think once we got through the group and into the quarterfinals, once we knew that we could take a team like Spain, I think the belief was always there going into the quarterfinal and semi-final. It didn't matter who we played, really, you know.
Yeah, and Brian Kerr was your manager there. How did you like playing for Brian?
Brian was excellent. He always talked and he'd always make you relax. But obviously, come kick-off time, everyone knew what they had to do. Preparation was key for Brian. Like, you know every player off the team and what their weaknesses were, what their strengths were, the whole lot. And even out of the tournament, we had another coach up there, Pete Mann, who used to head off and he wouldn't watch any of our games.
Yeah.
He off watches whoever we're playing in the next match, you know, just to get a bit of information on the team. So we were always well prepared and well drilled going into games.
Yeah, and one of the other members of the managerial team, Noel O'Reilly, sadly he's passed away, but he was another big character as well.
Yeah, Noel was. Noel was an excellent coach and he always made training enjoyable as he could. And then even in the evenings when we were over in Scotland, you'd see all the other teams in the hotel with us. They'd be up, wrapped up in the bed at 7:30, 8 o'clock. But with Noel, he'd have us up till 10 o'clock having a bit of crack.
Yeah.
He'd have the guitar out the whole lot. We'd have a little sing song before we headed off. And it was a way to get us to relax and take our mind off.
Yeah.
Maybe the more important things. I think it helps a lot in the sense that you could relax and you weren't on edge. And it helps you prepare a little bit better for the matches ahead.
And was that a crucial thing for your success? That good team morale, everyone was having fun and everyone got on well together.
Yeah, of course. Look, it helps when you get on well together off the pitch. Yeah. It shows on the pitch. You'd go that extra yard for a teammate or for your manager if the chips were down, you know.
Yeah.
It certainly did help. But that's one thing we did have all the way through. The tournament was an excellent team morale and team spirit, and it was always a good camp to be around, you know.
Yeah, and football was going very well for you at that stage, and you moved over to Nottingham Forest at the age of 15. How tough was that? Like I can't imagine going over at such a young age. How tough was it to adjust to life?
Well, I suppose at the time, I never looked at it like that, but. Looking back now, like I have a 15-year-old son myself now, and I don't think in a million years I'd let him leave. You know, it was a big step for myself looking back. But as a kid growing up, it's one thing I always wanted to be was a professional footballer. And when the chance came, it was a hard one to say no to. The first year when I was over there, as I said, I was quite young. I was quite homesick and all that.
Yeah.
But at the end of that year, then we had the European Championships, and that helped me. Then the following year, heading back over to Nottingham, and there was about 11 or 12 Irish over in Nottingham in the second year. So I think that helped a little bit as well in the settling down a little bit more, you know.
Yeah, and Andy Reid went over there around the same time. Where you established you became good friends with Andy. Did that help having someone like Andy over there around the same time?
Of course. The two of us went over on the same flight.
We
were on trials in Nottingham and all. We ended up being roommates for 2 or 3 years.
Yeah.
Still to this day, we keep in touch. It did help that you had someone that only lived maybe 10 minutes up the road. Back home, you knew he was going through the same thing, so it always helped to lean on each other and whatever not, you know.
Yeah, and you established yourself and the first team. That must have been, like, Nottingham Forest, like, even still, I know they're in the Championship now, but they're an iconic team. It must have felt that you're really, really made it when you established yourself in the first team.
Yeah, of course. Look, I was 18 when I got into the first team, and I made a good few appearances in my first season and second season, and unfortunately then I got an injury, and I was out for about 6 weeks with it. I know 6 weeks isn't a long time in football to be injured, but I think that's when I lost track of why I was over in England.
Yeah.
You know, I started maybe heading out a little bit too much and not working as hard as I should have been the whole lot, you know, and that's one time. People always ask you, do you have any regrets? And yeah, in football you have regrets. You should have worked hard and all that. But looking back now on how my life has turned out, I've 3 lovely kids, a lovely wife, the whole lot. So I could never have any regrets on how my life has panned out. But from a football point of view, 100%, could have worked a lot harder back then, you know.
Yeah, and I guess it's tough because I read an interview with you, and you were saying one of the problems is it's the boredom, because you're finished training after a few hours and you're at home and you're wondering what to do. So it's just filling in the hours.
Yeah. And of course, look, it's, as I said, you're finished at 12:30 most afternoons, and what I should have been doing is heading back out in the afternoon maybe for extra few training sessions, but instead I was heading home, heading out for a point in the afternoon, on Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, and the 1 point was turning into 10 points, you know, and all of a sudden you're hungover heading into training the next morning, and you won't be training as hard because you won't be feeling as up after a few points, you know, and it's just a little rut that you kind of fall into, but I'm not using that as an excuse or anything like that. Like, I think that could be, at the time, we're going back over 20 years now since I went over. At the time, there wasn't things in place like there is in place now with education for kids when they go over, and they're looked after a little bit more.
Yeah.
People keep an eye on them a little bit more, the whole lot, you know.
Yeah, and is that for people that, your advice for people that are going over, it is like just, like, a football career is quite short. Try and seize it, you know, like, I suppose it's easy being wise after the event, but that would be advice.
Of course. Yeah, now look, you could have all the talent in the world heading over, and you could be a lucky one and go all the way and become a millionaire, but there's the hundreds of kids, probably the thousands of kids for every one that makes it that has went over, and by the time they're 18, 19, they're back at home and they're probably wondering what life holds for them in the next few years. They haven't got their leaving cert and things like that, so I was to give advice, I'd be making sure that there's an education in place, and you have other qualifications by the time they turn 18, 19, so they have other pathways in life.
Yeah.
It can pressure a bit when you've had everything in front of you, and you had these dreams in front of you that have been taken away from you, and you're not 100% sure what your next step in life is going to be. Because as I said, when you're looking for jobs, they're looking for your leaving cert. Unfortunately, at the time, when I would have been 23, 24, I hadn't got any qualifications, you know. So it was a tough couple of years in my mid-20s, but I got over that and got a new career for myself in life, you know.
Yeah, and was it tough, like, because when you arrived back, like, I guess everyone in the neighbourhood would have been talking about you, you know, being the footballer going off to England. Was it tough when you came back to, you know, to talk to people?
Yeah, it was tough, because obviously I felt like I'd let people down, namely me own family and things like that. But it's the Irish way as well.
Like,
people like to see people that they know fail and what they've tried to do. So they always had people whispering in the background that you hear about and things like that. Some people would be happy to see that you haven't made what you thought you were going to make yourself. So that's hard to get used to. But as I say, you just have to ignore all that and just try and get your head around that. What's the next step in life to move forward, I suppose, you know?
Yeah, and is it a kind of an important thing now, like you went over very young, would it be better off players, like if we have a good league here and people stay in the League of Ireland and, you know, don't go over into their 20s or, you know, they're that bit mature and a bit more life experience behind them?
Yeah, listen, I don't know if there is a right way and a wrong way.
Yeah.
What I will say, I think you have to have a little bit of luck on your side. Like, you look at a lot of lads that could have went away when they're 15 and 16, and by the time they were 18 or 19, it was probably a little bit too late because they hadn't progressed as they maybe wanted. And then you look at other cases where, I'll use Jamie Coleman as an example, where he played for Sligo Rovers up until he was 19, 20, and then he went over and he's a proven Ireland international, now Irish captain, and playing Premiership week in, week out. So, like, I don't think you can advise right or wrong. All you can do is advise on what steps you maybe messed up on and what you think is maybe right, but maybe my way isn't right, maybe it is. I don't know, you know, that way.
Yeah, exactly.
If there was a league here and it's probably ran in the youth setup and it's professional, like, there's no point in heading across the water then, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And you're back coaching your local club there. How are you enjoying the coaching?
I love coaching. I got into the coaching probably about 7-8 years ago now. With my local club, and then I left for a few years, went off to another club, but I'm back here a year coaching the senior team at Kilimanis. So things are going well. It's nice when the lads are taking things on board and they're enjoying training and enjoying learning of you. You get a good feeling out of that after, you know.
Yeah, and just a general, like, there's a lot of negativity about Irish football at the moment. What's your opinion of that? Because there's a lot talking about, you know, with the situation, the last couple of results have been disappointment. Would you share that kind of pessimism a lot of people have about Irish football?
No, look, I'm a supporter of Irish football. I always want to see the national team doing well. Obviously, at the minute, Martin and Roy are going through a tough patch. They're going through a transition where they're after losing a lot of experienced players over the last 2 or 3 years. And they're obviously trying to look at the other options that they have. And I know there's a few good under-19s coming through, but it's all about all them getting a chance with their clubs, whether it be over in England or over in Ireland.
Yeah.
And then hopefully then in the next couple of years they put a plan in place, because they're probably better off putting a plan in place and maybe targeting a tournament in 4 years' time rather than looking at next year, you know, because I don't think the ability is there at the moment. Maybe blooding young lads through and bringing them on to target maybe the 2022 World Cup, shall we say.
Yeah, yeah. And there is some, like, the under-17s got a great result last week against Holland. So there is some young players coming through. So it's not all doom and gloom.
100%. Yeah. Of course. I think every country goes through. Holland went through there for a couple of years, and they seem to be on the way back up now. Even when France won the World Cup in 1998, I know they went a few tournaments prior to that point, not qualifying, but it was all a plan in place to make sure in the years beyond then tournaments that they could challenge for major trophies, you know.
Yeah, listen, Keith, I really appreciate you joining me today and telling your story and sharing your opinions on Irish football. Thanks a million for joining us, and best luck and as you continue your coaching career. That was great. That was Keith Fye, who joined us, who was telling us about his career in Irish football. We're going to have a piece of music now, and I'll be back in a couple of minutes.
Old pirates, yes, they rob I. sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I from the bottomless pit, but my hand was made strong by the hand of the Almighty. We forward in this generation triumphantly. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our minds. Have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Ooh, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs, redemption songs, redemption songs. Emancipate yourselves from mental slavery. None but ourselves can free our mind. Oh, have no fear for atomic energy, 'cause none of them can stop at the time. How long shall they kill our prophets while we stand aside and look? Yes, some say it's just a part of it. We've got to fulfill the book. Won't you help to sing these songs of freedom? 'Cause all I ever have, redemption songs. All I ever have, redemption songs. Songs of freedom, songs of freedom.
That was Bob Marley, Redemption Song. I played that song. I'm sure a lot of people have seen the U Bohemians jersey, and it features the image of Bob Marley, and it's getting a lot of attention on social media. It's if you haven't seen the jersey yet, I really, really would strongly urge you to check it out, because it's a really, really interesting design, and it's got a lot of people talking about Bohemians, and a lot of people in. Indeed, I heard some of the marketing people in Bohemians talking about the jersey, and the sales of the You Away kit have gone through the roof. So if you get a chance, look that jersey up, because it's really, really interesting design. Just on the show now, for the next few months, as we get to the, I suppose, the dreaded Christmas period, I'm just going to play some of my favourite interviews back that we had. We'd some great guests throughout the show for the last few months, and one of the early guests I had was Dave O'Connor. Dave is a coach at Shelburne, and Dave took on the challenge of doing 10 marathons in 10 days. So in the middle of his run of doing them marathons, I gave Dave O'Connor a ring, and We're just going to have a listen back to that interview, because thinking back today of my favourite interviews, this interview was brilliant. It was really, really inspiring what he was doing. He did the run around the running track near the Dublin airport, and it was just a really, really, and he raised loads of money for Aware. So we're just going to play back a bit of that interview.
O'Connor, who is running 10 marathons in 10 days in order to raise awareness of mental health. Davey, how are you doing?
How's things? How are you? I'm good, thanks.
Not too bad. So you've completed 6 out of 10 marathons. How are you holding up?
I'm not too bad. I'm a little bit sore, but the mind is good, which is the main thing. But look, so far so good. It's been great.
Yeah, it's an amazing undertaking. What prompted you to take up this challenge?
I suppose first my own progress in terms of my own mental health, my own experience with mental illness, and I'm running this in the running track, and the reason for that is it's an expression of sort of, you know, what you'd go through in terms of a sort of repetition, monotony, that kind of never-ending feeling associated with mental illness. But if you associate yourself with the right people and develop a right mindset, you'll get through it. And that's what I've been doing.
Yeah, and do you mind, I know you've talked before about your own mental health problems. Would you mind telling us a little bit about that, David?
Yeah, look, I've suffered from sort of severe low mood right throughout my 20s. And this was a result of just being bullied in school. So I kind of let myself be put down. I let myself be kicked and sort of being punished in school for no reason. I was what you consider to be the chubby kid in school. It was more kind of mental torture, I suppose, that I put myself through on the back of this. But I accepted that at the time. And as a result of that, I just kind of angry with myself for putting up with it. So just that rolled in with a lot of other things. Just sort of built up right throughout my 20s, and I just was affected pretty badly throughout. So look, I'm doing this to kind of prove that we're all capable of doing so much more.
Yeah, and Dave, you've mentioned you know, the power of positive thinking. How did you learn them skills? Because a lot of us put ourselves down, and now you seem to be in a better place. How did you learn them skills to kind of think more positively about yourself and not let other people get you down?
I suppose I hit rock bottom, to be honest. It was getting to that point was what made me realise I could do better. I remember just getting to that point where I couldn't see any future and just sort of looking at it and saying, I've spent years here kind of mentally torturing myself, mentally destroying myself. And, like, look at where this is after getting me. And I put in a serious commitment to that. So I just kind of realised, like, look, if I can match that effort in the other direction and kind of build myself up, make myself better and stronger, I'm going to be in a better place. So that was the commitment I made myself 6 years ago. And, look, you don't heal yourself from this. You just learn to deal with it.
Okay.
And that's what I've been doing for 6 years.
Yeah, and I know everyone that has experienced problems, everyone's situation is different, but I suppose for anyone listening in, would you have any advice for them if they're experiencing any difficulties?
I think sort of the voice that's put out there, and there is plenty of awareness, is talk to someone. But I think before that point is talk to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, meet yourself where you are, talk to yourself, and make a decision as to what your next step will be. But when you trek through that, then somebody will be there. Somebody will listen to you. It's not black and white. I appreciate that. But there is hope. There's hope for everybody, without a doubt.
And going back to the actual marathon, has it been tougher than you expected?
I was going to say a bit strange this, but I've thoroughly enjoyed it. It's been incredible. And the reason is it's just brought the best out of people. Just in terms of true altruism and decency from people. You know, it's been quite organic how this has grown. And, you know, it's just been people showing up right throughout the course of the 6 days to kind of run a few laps with me or run a few miles or whatever. And it's been great, that urges me on. When I'm sort of slogging it through and I see somebody that I know coming through that gate, that just gives you a lift, you know. So, look, I know it sounds peculiar, but I've really enjoyed it. It's your most incredible experience in life so far.
Yeah, and I know all the clubs in the League of Ireland, the women's football teams, they're right behind you. So it is great to see so much support.
Yeah, it's been brilliant. We've gotten the back in the sort of the senior men's and the senior women's right throughout the league, as you say. But not just that, just the broader scale as well, just everybody, because it's relative to everybody. And as I said, we're doing this for the WEAR, National Mental Health Organization. And we're raising funds for them, so kind of the cause behind it as well, and has been rolling in behind that too.
And for people who want to support you, Davey, how do they go about doing it?
You can just go on to the event Facebook page, and the team are looking after that. So if you want to, it's just a word.
Yeah, and I was looking at the funds. Your aim is to raise 10,000, but you're over 5,000 at the moment, so it's a remarkable achievement so far.
Yeah, it's been incredible. And again, it just goes down to the generosity of people. Mm. That doesn't surprise me, for kind of with Irish people, you know, people buy into this type of thing.
Yeah, and people can go down. You're running it. It's just beside the Dublin airport if people want to call down and lend their support or maybe run a lap with you.
Yeah, that's it. I'm there in the Alta every day, which is, as you say, just beside Dublin airport. I start myself at kind of 9 o'clock, but we tell people to kind of go down from 10 o'clock onwards. And there's been plenty of people coming down and that just showing support and making their donations. That's so, yeah, all welcome.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And just finally, before I let you go, I know you're a coach there at Shelburne, and it's been a great start to the season so far, especially the result last night.
Yeah, we've had a really good start. Look at the competitive division. So it's kind of open to all, but fair play on Owen Hurley, the manager. They're kind of 2 years now, and he's been building a really strong squad there. So the dynamic looks good. Nice sort of balance between experience and youth now. And it's really good start so far. We were winning the cup last night, and big game on Friday night, then away to Drogheda. It's a long way to go, but we've had a good start and we're doing well. We just keep that going.
And that was David O'Connor, who spoke to us a few months ago back in the show. And when we were talking to him, we were hoping that Shelburne might get promoted. But unfortunately, as people may be aware, they lost out in the playouts to Drogheda. So, and unfortunately, Owen Heary is not manager anymore. An announcement was made last week that he would be leaving the club. So, unfortunately, another year in the first division for Shelburne. I'm just looking at the time and I'm totally out of time. I'd like to thank my guest, Keith Fay, who joined me today. Thank you for listening, and I'll talk to you at the same time next week. Enjoy your sporting week.